Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Iraqi teenagers dragged two bloodied U.S. soldiers from a wrecked vehicle and pummeled them with concrete blocks Sunday, witnesses said, describing the killings as a burst of savagery in a city once safe for Americans. Another soldier was killed by a bomb and a U.S. Allied police chief was assassinated. The U.S.-led coalition also said it grounded commercial flights after the military confirmed that a missile struck a DHL cargo plane that landed Saturday at Baghdad International Airport with its wing aflame. Nevertheless, American officers insisted they were making progress in bringing stability to Iraq. Five U.S. soldiers were killed and seven injured when their helicopter crashed Sunday near the American military headquarters north of the Afghan capital, U.S. Central Command said. The soldiers were involved in an ongoing U.S. military operation dubbed Mountain Resolve, taking place in the east of the country. A U.S. military helicopter crashed today near Bagram, Afghanistan, said a statement sent by email from Central Command in Tampa, Florida. Early reports indicate seven service members were injured and at least five service members were killed. It is not clear what caused the crash, and the military said it was investigating. Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle is demanding that Republicans stop showing their first television ad of the 2004 presidential race, which he called repulsive and outrageous. The 30-second ad, which aired in Iowa over the weekend, features clips of Bush during his State of the Union address last January. It portrays Bush as a fighter of terrorism and says his opponents are now attacking the president for attacking the terrorists. Other Democrats on the Sunday talk shows joined Daschle in his criticism. Presidential candidate Wesley Clark said the ad is wrong and it violates the pledge the president made not to exploit 9/11 for political purposes. Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy called it an attempt to stifle dissent, and Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman said the ad was misleading. The Republican National Committee said it has no plans to honor Daschle's wishes. More after this.
Hi, I'm Morgan Freeman. America's national park system is one of the best ideas our country ever had, and I've got a lifetime of memories to prove it. But our parks are in trouble. Inadequate funding and other pressures are risking some of America's most awe-inspiring places. To help, visit www.americansfornationalparks.org or call 1-800-NATPARK, 1-800-NATPARK. That's just too much to lose.
A 19-year-old Norwegian has been convicted of drunken driving, even though he was a passenger, had a sober designated driver, and didn't even have the keys to start the car that was turned off. The man and a friend were on their way home from a party in April when they stopped at a gas station to buy some food. The man reached over from the passenger seat to change a CD in the car's stereo and hit the manual gear stick. The car went into neutral and started to roll. A police officer was watching and detained him for drunken driving. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
It's time for another chapter of The Lifestyles of the Rich and Cranky. Rich people have problems too. For example, what's the use of being rich if you can't be pampered? Yet there's little to no respect for wealthy people who wallow around in luxury. So imagine the agony of the rich as they wrestle with ways to be pampered without being ridiculed for it. Take corporate jets. Your top CEOs don't travel first class. They travel their class in private jets. No lines, no wanding of their private parts, no mingling with us peons. Their new favorite is Gulfstream's G450 jet, which will fly 8 passengers 5,000 miles nonstop and PDQ. Price tag, $33 million. But that's stripped bare. You get a flyable plane for $33 million, but no interior. No seats, wall coverings, washroom, carpet, storage bins, etc. It takes another $3 or $4 million to have your plane outfitted, with an emphasis on soft and plush. Deerskin sleep seats, mahogany cabinets, Persian carpets, muted lighting, flat-screen video displays with surround sound systems, walk-in showers, and, of course, 24-karat gold plating for the fixtures. As one jet maker puts it, the finishes and furnishings should look more like the interior of a multi-million-dollar home than an airplane. Yes, but what are the small shareholders and the workers to think? They see these flying mansions as nothing but extravagant toys for over-pampered executive fat cats. CEOs get cranky when asked about this, but now they've devised a carefully crafted response. A jet encourages in-flight productivity, they claim, asserting that it's just another work tool, like a carpenter's lathe or a school teacher's book bag. This is Jim Hightower saying, if it takes Persian carpets and gold fixtures to be productive, why don't they provide these for all workers?
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way. This is Tom Hartman broadcasting live coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, Stream 145, and streaming all across the planet, 91 countries now that we've tracked or listening, on radiopower.org. IEAmericaRadio.com and Live365.com. Welcome to our program today. Today, November 24th, day 133. In the search for the traitor in the White House who committed treason by outing the wife of Joe Wilson, Valerie Plame, the CIA officer. When are we going to find out whether, as Joe Wilson says, Karl Rove will be frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs. Day 287 in the search for weapons of mass destruction. I guess they're still looking. Day 773 in the search for the person who sent the anthrax to Tom Daschle and Pat Leahy. Pat Leahy, the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee that was then considering, skeptically, I might add, the Patriot Act, and Tom Daschle, the head of the Democrats, who at that time ran the Senate, who had the ability to block the Patriot Act. Have you heard anything in the news about whether the Justice Department is even still looking into this thing? I mean, is it kind of like, okay. A few people died, but, you know, we got our Patriot Act. It's day 796 in the search for Osama bin Laden. That man whose father is business partners with the father of our president, George W. Bush. Our resident, anyway. What a remarkable day. What a remarkable day. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Vermont. I hope it's a pleasant day wherever you may be. This decision of the Massachusetts Supreme Court. There are many things I want to talk about today, and we're going to get into. I want to get into the failed Bush domestic and international policies led us toward the end of America as the major superpower and a role model for the world. A fascinating piece by George Soros suggesting that American supremacy in the world is sort of like a bubble, like the stock market bubble.
And Al-Qaeda is a number of experts. I mean, the RAND Corporation and whatnot, they're all saying, hey, you know, invading Iraq was the best thing we could have ever done to help Al-Qaeda. These people are ecstatic. They want us to do some more of this kind of thing. Because it's just like the recruiting is just incredible. And you know, you've heard my rants before about how terrorism isn't something you can declare war on any more than drugs is or poverty is. I mean, these are all rhetorical wars. In order to have a real war, you have to have a nation on the other end of it. So the war on terrorism is simply a screen, a fog to take away our civil liberties. And the war on Iraq was just a grab for American corporations and to get 10% of the world's oil supply. I mean, it's quite obvious. In any case, this gay marriage thing in Massachusetts, here in the People's Republic of Vermont, we went through this enormous battle. The Supreme Court of Vermont, it played out very much the same way. The Supreme Court of Vermont, there were two women who wanted to get married, and they sued. And the case went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court went back and looked at the Constitution of Vermont, which was written in the late 1700s. It was actually written before the United States Constitution was written, because Vermont was a sovereign nation before the United States, before it joined the United States, as was Texas. We're one of only two states that were actually nations before we joined the United States. And they looked back at that ancient Constitution and discovered that nowhere in it does it say that marriage is a man and a woman. And so they said to the legislature, they said, well, first of all, they said to the two women who wanted to get married, we agree with you, you have the legal right, but put it on hold for 180 days, as I recall, while the legislature works this thing out. And this thing just blew up in the face of everybody. I mean, Howard Dean was governor, and the Democrats, the compromise that they worked out was civil unions, where they said, hey, you know, marriage is really something that comes out of religious law. It's one of those few areas, actually. You know, there's just folks who say, well, the United States is based on the Ten Commandments and on the Bible. Turns out that's not the case. And if you look at commondreams.org, you can see a piece I wrote last week. I think it was published on Thursday. So it should still be there on commondreams.org. And if not, go to tomhartmann.com and click on the Articles on Democracy link. By the way, if you go to tomhartmann.com, you can also click on the chat room where we're having a lively discussion, or our message boards. Where we just recently figured out how to let people put their pictures next to their names. It's getting very interesting in there. Anyhow, I wrote this piece pointing out that the founders, Jefferson went through this whole long screed about how British common law preceded Christianity in England by 200 years. England was a pagan nation with common law, kings, and what you might call a constitution for 200 years before it became Christian. And so Jefferson says, you know, our laws aren't rooted. He said to say that our laws are rooted in Christianity is to say that that all of science is rooted in Isaac Newton. I mean, there's just yes, there's some things that are in common, like don't kill and don't steal. But you look at the Ten Commandments. We don't have a law that says you can only have one God. We don't have a law that says you have to honor your mother and father. We don't have a law that says that you can't covet your husband, your neighbor's wife, or that you can't have sex out of wedlock or whatever. I mean, we have had some of laws similar to that, but we don't now, by and large, in all states. And so on. I mean, you know, you go through the Ten Commandments, and you discover that really only two of them are laws. And those, you know, don't kill, don't steal, are laws that, you know, tribal people who, you know, aboriginals in Australia who have a 60,000-year-old culture have those as part of their laws. So, you know, it's just kind of in common. I mean, you know, prairie dogs have that law. They don't kill each other. They don't steal from each other. They get all upset. I mean, those of you who have more than one pet, these are laws of nature. So anyhow, the United States is not grounded in biblical or nor founded on biblical principles. And the founders were very clear about that. And I lay that out in great detail with quotes from Jefferson and Franklin and Madison And, you know, just in this article on common dreams, and it's on our website on tomhartman.com, click the articles on democracy. But marriage, they decided here in Vermont, was something that actually probably really was the province of the church and had somehow made its way into state law. And so they said, we've got this institution where people can have certain legal rights, the right to inherit, the right to make decisions for each other if somebody becomes infirm or mentally incapable or incompetent, the right to mutual benefits from things like Social Security and pensions, the right to share health insurance policies and get the kinds of discounts that, not just in health insurance and Social Security, but in a lot of realms, discounts or aggregations that are available to couples that are not available, to married couples that are not available to single people living together. And that, in fact, there were even some situations where it would be appropriate for this kind of union to take place in a situation that had nothing to do with love and romance, where two elderly, I think the example that was used was two elderly spinsters, two women who were sisters, and they were getting up there. They were in their 80s, and they wanted to make sure that one could inherit from the other easily, and that if one became too dotty, the other one had the authority to tell them when to pull the plug. That there should be some kind of an ability to join into a civil bond that says, we're making a business deal together here. We're making a relationship here that's recognized by the state. And that it doesn't have to be called marriage, because marriage is something churches do. And so what they came up with here in Vermont was this thing that they called civil unions. And it's not just limited to men and women, or women and women, or men and men, who want to have romantic relationships. It even goes beyond that, as I said. And says, you know, if we're in the law business, going to be in the business of helping people put together essentially one-on-one monogamous relationships, I don't think it provides for multiple, for beyond two people. Although I could be wrong, but I don't think so. If we're going to be in the business of defining these things, and we historically have, and we therefore have a legal obligation to continue this, particularly since federal law defines so many of these things. Under Social Security, there are certain benefits that are available to married people or to spouses that aren't available to others. If we're going to do this, if we're going to have an obligation to do it, then we'll do it, and we'll do it in a civil fashion. And we passed the civil union law. And only about, as I recall, and I lived here in this state through the whole thing and read the newspapers every day, and, you know, I live right here in the capital city. I'm familiar with what's going on. Capital's just a few blocks from my house. And through this whole thing, got this sense that, the polls, I mean, my recollection, I'd have to go back and look, but the number 38 sticks in my mind. 38% of the people supported it. I mean, it was fewer than half, as I recall, of Vermonters were in favor of this. And yet, the legislature said, okay, the Supreme Court has said this is our Constitution. There was an effort by the Republicans to amend the Constitution. But amending the Constitution in Vermont requires a two-thirds vote of both the House and the Senate and the agreement of the governor to call a constitutional convention during which the amendment can happen. And they didn't have two-thirds of the House and two-thirds of the Senate or the agreement of the governor to amend the Constitution to say that a marriage is only man and woman. Then the Supreme Court would have had to back down. So instead what they did was they came up with this civil unions thing. And I think that there's a lesson in this for Massachusetts and for the rest of the nation. And it may not be what you think I'm going to suggest. But I find this very interesting. Ellen Goodman has a column in today's paper, along with Cal Thomas, two opposing views about marriage and civil unions and things. And what should we do about it? What should we do? You know, not just what Massachusetts should do, because this is going to come right across the United States, but how should we be handling this? How are other countries handling this? What's the appropriate way to handle this? And I let me lay out my suggestions for you in just a second right after this break, and then we'll take some calls and see what you think about it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Women over 50 and men over 40 are waking up to a surprising fact. They're already at risk of a heart attack. Because of age and other risk factors, doctors often recommend Bayer low-dose aspirin as part of a routine to help prevent a heart attack. Bayer is the leading aspirin brand, and taking Bayer for your heart is easy. Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen and ask about adding Bayer to your routine for many more great days ahead. Trust your heart to Bayer.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Dave.
Hey there.
Dave has a problem.
Maybe you have the problem understanding that we can be under attack at any time.
Dave suffers from TMRWM, otherwise known as too much or right wing amidiitis, or something like that.
The alarm's at orange now. What does that mean? Where's my chart?
But Dave's not alone.
Another Saddam tape. He's still alive.
There are millions of Americans all over the United States suffering from TMRWM.
Oh, there's weapons of mass destruction there. Somewhere. They'll find them.
Symptoms of TMRWM include insomnia, irritability, suspecting more than three people a day of being a terrorist.
That guy right there looks like one. So does this kid. You're not fooling me, buddy.
And much, much more. But there is a cure.
There is?
You can get the best in progressive talk radio weekdays on the only progressive talk radio network there is, IE America Radio Network. Get more information at ieamericaradio.com. Let's save our country one American at a time.
Thank you, IE America.
Let go of me, Dave.
Sorry.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
You can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Over the mountains, down in the valley, lives a former talk show host. Everybody knows his name. He said there's no doubt about it. It was a myth, the fingerprints. I've seen them all, and man, they're all the same. Well, the sun gets weary and the sun goes down, the elbow sees the watermelon, and the lights come up on the black pit down. Now somebody says, what's a better thing to do?
And welcome back to the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman of the IE America Radio Network. Ellen Goodman today writes a column, Marriage Has Come a Long Way, and she points out that in the Texas sodomy case, Antonin Scalia, the Supreme Court justice, who dissented, who thought that that sodomy should remain illegal in Texas, said, what justification could there possibly be for denying the benefits of marriage to homosexual couples, given the decision of the court? And, of course, he was right. And Ellen Goodman goes on to point out, until 20 years ago, a husband was exempt from rape charges in New York because a wife didn't have the right to say no. In 1965, the state lost the power to control sex within marriage when the Supreme Court overturned a contraception ban on selling contraceptives to couples. In 1967, the state lost its power, this would be New York State, lost its power to prevent a person from marrying a person of a different race. In the 1970s, the states changed the decisions about how and under what circumstances marriages could end with the no-fault divorce laws. Each of these changes, she says, ending the subordination of wives, ending race restrictions, decoupling marriage from decisions about children, sex, and divorce, set off alarm bells. In every case, you had conservatives going, oh, no, we can't have that. We can't have, you know, in the Connecticut contraception case, we can't allow pharmacists to sell contraceptives to married couples. Oh, no, we can't do that. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't stop it. And, you know, things changed. And they said, oh, no, you can't make it illegal for a man to rape his wife. And they said, no, it is possible for there to be sexual violence within a marriage and for the court, for the law to recognize it, and so on and so forth. So marriage has really transformed itself a lot in the last three generations, the last 60 years, primarily in the last two generations. On the other hand, you got Cal Thomas, you know, the conservative, pointing out, first of all, he uses this straw man argument. He says, G.K. Chesterton's warning has come true. The danger when men stop believing in God is not that they'll believe in nothing, but that they'll believe in anything. Well, first of all, this doesn't have anything to do with God, and this has to do with marriage. Although there are some who say that God was the one who created marriage. But again, you look at tribal people who have never had exposure to the Bible, and they have institutions that look like marriage. And you look at a lot of animals, and they have, you know, there's a lot of monogamous animals out there. Not the majority. Maybe it is the majority. I don't know. But not all of them. But certainly there's a lot of animals that have, penguins, for example, have lifelong relationships. And so I think that Cal rather exaggerates. But then he says, even secular, and here's the big argument that the right-wingers use on this thing. He says, even secular sociologists have produced studies showing children need a father and a mother in the same home. And I think we can all agree that that's an optimal thing. But if we're going to use that as the argument to ban gay marriage, which might end up being, you know, 1%, 3%, even 5% of marriages, it's extremely unlikely. But it's certainly not even going to be 10% of marriages. What about the 50% of children, more or less, in the United States who are in single-parent households as a result of divorce? Should we ban that? Should we say that those children can't stay with their parents anymore because there's not a man and a woman in the house? I mean, this argument is the weakest of all the arguments, and yet they keep trotting it out as the strongest one. So what's the solution? My solution is to separate church from state. For all of the states to say, we're no longer in the marriage business. We will sanction civil unions between men and men, women and women, whoever wants. We will sanction civil unions. And if somebody wants to get what they call married, they have to find a church that will do it, because marriage is a religious institution. That we need to redefine this and say marriage is something that has to do with religion and church. And a contract law is really a civil union. And the states will do one and the churches will do another. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Let us know what you think. 800-TALK-YES. We'll be right back after this break.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Deciding how much of a chemical is safe for people is not just a question of science, it's also one of values. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Government regulators use risk assessments to establish acceptable exposure levels to certain chemicals. Risk assessments are based on scientific research, leading to laws and regulations that might seem objective and sound. But Colleen Moore, a psychologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, says these rules also need to include a community's values. In her book, Silent Scourge, Moore argues that after data on a pollutant have been collected, citizens should help decide what actions to take.
A numerical risk assessment is a way for a community to come together and decide their values. But at present, risk assessment is not being used that way in our society. And so one of the important points that I make in the book is that we need to examine each step in the risk assessment as citizens and activist groups of citizens and also industry and say, well, is this the level of protection that I want?
For example, say a particular chemical is thought to pose a 1 in a million chance of causing deterioration in motor skills. Some communities might see that as an acceptable risk. Others might want tougher or more lenient standards. Moore says pollutants that affect motor skills and mental abilities need especially close evaluation.
In any risk assessment that involves a behavioral outcome like IQ test scores or children's fine motor functioning, where the scores vary continuously, the first thing that the risk assessors need to do is set a cutoff for what counts as a negative outcome.
Moore says people need to speak out about what risks they're willing to accept, and regulators should include those opinions in their decisions. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick-dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
narwhal,
Talk. We talk about what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Ostrich.
Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I don't want millions, mister. I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is the right to live, mister. Won't you give me back my job again?
And welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You may wonder, you know, hey, the FBI is like snooping into the lives of, well, in fact, I look on our chat room right now. It's an extraordinary thing having folks actually having discussions about your program while you're on the air. And I talk with them and they talk with me, and it's so useful because you get a sense of, you know, what people are thinking about and what's going on and how people are responding. And in the midst of this talking about
gay marriages. You know, in the chat room, folks have been talking about, hey, did you notice that the FBI has collected extensive information on the tactics, training, and organization of anti-war demonstrators? And our junkie points out. And these are, yeah, they're, and we're, in fact, as the program goes on in our second and third hour here, we're going to be talking about all these kind of things. I've got a whole bunch of news and information I want to share with you, ranging from the strange to the frightening to the hopeful. And the question may occur to you: well, why is this guy talking about gay marriage when there's like real issues out there? What inspired me to raise this in this first hour was this morning listening on NPR to Cokie Roberts, whose father was, I want to say her father was Huey Long. I'm probably wrong on that, but it was a famous senator from the South. And Cokie has been thought by many to be kind of a liberal. My sense of her is that she's really conservative leaning, but in any case. And she made the comment on NPR this morning that the Republicans are absolutely wetting their pants. That that wasn't her phrase, but they are just absolutely so happy that this Massachusetts decision came down, because until this happened, they were concerned. And again, I'm not putting words in her mouth. This is her saying this is my spin on what she said. Until this decision came down in Massachusetts, the Republicans, Karl Rove, was worried that Howard Dean could beat him. And one of the reasons that the Republicans are running these ads in Iowa that say, it's terrible how the Democrats are attacking the president for attacking the terrorists, right, is to stop Dean. And maybe to stop Gephardt. I think Gephardt and Dean represent real serious threats to this administration, but they're particularly worried about Dean. And what Cokie Roberts said this morning was, now that gay marriage is on the table, it's in play for the election cycle, the Republicans are going to take this ball and carry it as far as they can, and they're going to use it to beat up Dean, because he's the only guy who actually signed a law for civil unions. And this, Cokie Roberts said, will be the issue that will cause George Bush to remain president for another 4 years. So this is not, you know, a frivolous discussion. In fact, it could be one of the critical issues of our day, particularly given how effectively the Republicans have used these wedge issues to swing elections. So my suggestion, I'll just lay it out real quickly, and then I'm going to go to the phones. We've got three callers on hold. My suggestion is very straightforward. Each state's laws should be civil. We should define, you know, just very straightforward. Civil, there are, you know, marriage has certain civil things associated with it. Okay, cool. And if somebody wants to have, and so they can have a civil union, and if somebody wants to have a marriage, then they can go to the church. Now, there are, you know, there will be Unitarian churches that will marry men and men and women and women, and there will be Catholic churches that won't. And you get to pick what church you want to be married in, or synagogue, or mosque, or you know, Wiccan ceremony, or whatever. And the reality is that the government's very liberal in who they will allow to perform wedding ceremonies. You can, you know, send in your $10 and become a member of the church or the whatever, and become a minister, and you can do marriages. You know, the government hasn't really played much in that game about figuring out who's real and who's not. And so. Leave marriage to the churches and leave civil unions to the government. That is my suggestion. And that way, Jerry Falwell will end up having to attack the Unitarians rather than attack the Democrats. Because who gets to marry whom becomes an argument among the churches rather than within the states. The states simply have contract laws between individuals that correlate with what the churches are calling marriage. That's my take on it. Now, 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Mark in Santa Fe has some thoughts on this. Hey, Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Mark? Mark has vanished.
Hello?
There you go. Hey, Mark.
It's Mike, actually.
Oh, Mike, I'm sorry. Hey, Mike.
No problem. Listening to you, I'm just kind of really pleased. I mean, this is the first thing that I've heard regarding gay marriage, which is, I think, a misnomer anyway, that makes sense. It's reasonable. I mean, I've been with somebody for 24 years. I was involved in the founding of the first gay and lesbian PAC in L.A. in the late 60s. Even then, we knew that this was going to be a big issue at some point in time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't need the government educating me on my moral values. My parents did that, and they did a damn good job. Otherwise, I wouldn't be with the same terrific person for going on a quarter of a century.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, those of us who do care to live realistic, honest, caring lives deserve to be protected. And what you just laid out makes absolutely more sense than anything I've heard. And I want to thank you for that.
Okay, well, spread the word. I would like to. I think this is a simple rebuttal to the right wingers. It gives the Democrats an opportunity in this coming election to say, hey, you know, we're not really talking about marriage here. Marriage is something that the churches can decide, and the Unitarians right now will marry gay couples, and so will, you know, any number of other churches that, you know, and you got the debate going on in the Episcopal Church right now about, you know, the gay bishop. I mean, you know, the next step may be gay marriage. So, you know, just let the churches fight that one out. But at the state level, if two people want to create a legal bond between them, then let's do it. I mean, you know, let's
there
do
you
it
go.
As long, you know,
go.
as long as they're consenting adults, you know, what business is it of the state to be legislating morality? It's just a very simple
and,
thing.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, and I'm going to jump off
thank
here
you,
and
Mark.
Let somebody else talk.
Okay, thank you, Mark. I appreciate that, and I hope you have a great holiday, too. We'll be broadcasting right through it, by the way. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Tim in Connecticut, what are your thoughts on this?
Tom, you know, I have to come down on the side that, you know, it's time for people to realize that the term civil union and marriage are not the same thing. It's time for people to, in my opinion, to, you know, really realize the hundreds of differences that are out there. I was almost shocked to see on that McLaughlin group, Ellen, I forgot her last name, spinning Howard Dean's position that it should be a state-by-state position. You know, the Democratic Party shamefully passed this Defense of Marriage Act, led by Bill Clinton a long time ago. That was one of the things that drove me out of this party, and I became a Green because of the fact that, you know, they want to try to have it both ways. They want to try to spin stuff, appease people, and win elections instead of stand up for basic civil rights. And that's the shameful part. People are going to have to realize that the issues of Social Security, death benefits, all of the federal things that are guaranteed married couples need to be reinforced for gay couples also.
Yeah.
We can't have this hodgepodge, you know, incrementalism. You said it last week, state by state, you know, approach to some of these issues anymore.
But Tim, hang on just a second here, Tim. I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right that in the federal constitution, The Constitution doesn't say we are giving these rights to the states and we are giving these rights to the people. The Constitution does the exact reverse of that. The Constitution says we are taking for the federal government certain privileges. We're nailing down some areas that are our responsibility. We'll run the courts. We'll run, you know, we'll do this, we'll do that. And everything else that we say, and this is the 9th and 10th Amendments of the Constitution, everything else that we didn't claim gets to be claimed by the states, and anything that isn't claimed by us and the states is the property of the people. And the federal constitution.
That's a good constitutional issue, Tom. But what about Social Security? What about all the other?
Well, I'll tell you. I'll answer that in just a second. Just hang on there with me for just a second. The Constitution does not define marriage. Doesn't even reference marriage. So what happens is that marriage becomes an issue
a legal issue that has to be defined by each state. Now, Social Security does, I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I believe that Social Security, all the forms that I've seen that have to do with Social Security, don't use the word marriage. They use the word spouse. You know, whose spouse and this spouse and that spouse and these kinds of things. And because there is no federal recognition of marriage. There is federal recognition of spousal benefits. Well, actually, I guess on the IRS it says married, single. Yeah, so they're using the word marriage, but the point is that, you know, that could be changed. Or we could stay with that word. Oh boy, it could get confusing, couldn't it?
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, those rights that are codified under the law that through, you know, perhaps in the 30s and 40s when a lot of lawmakers had no idea that these kinds of issues were going to come up, now have to be started to be addressed. And there are some
right, but not at the federal level, is my point. They have to be addressed at the state level because it's the states who have the authority over marriage.
With all due respect, what is the federal laws passing that, you know, guarantees some of these rights for some of these federal programs? You know,
but you're not married and eligible for those federal programs until the state says you are. Just like a corporation can only be formed in a state, so too can the union of two people only be formed in a state.
Well, okay. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Okay. Thanks, Tim. So, you know, maybe you think I'm defending Howard Dean saying it has to be state by state or time. This is my understanding of how the law is. And I've been involved with this. I mean, it's for years, and it's just it seems to me very straightforward. We want to start a movement to get each state to say, okay, we're going to define these things. Now, but I really think that we're going to define the privileges that were previously called marriage. And each state has laws that define what all those things are, as so and so, and they're available to straight couples and gay couples. And if people want to call themselves married, you know, they can call themselves married if they go to a justice of the peace. But that is a legal document, and let's redefine. If we're going to redefine marriage in some way, let's redefine marriage as being a religious thing coming out of the religious institutions. And of course there are some that, you know, are very non-mainstream, but they can perform the ceremony. Because right now what happens is when a minister performs a ceremony, then, you know, I should just lay this out. Back in the early 70s, I was ordained in a church in Detroit. I was the pastor of that church for 2 years, and I performed weddings. I know how this works. And here in Vermont, some friends of mine wanted me to perform a wedding, and to get a license, to get legal to do that, I had to get a letter from the church headquarters in Michigan saying that I was legally ordained. I had to take it to the Secretary of State here in Vermont and get them, Vermont, to recognize me so that I could perform that wedding. It was, you know, no big deal. But what we've done is we've said, okay, we're going to give state sanction to religious events. And I think that that's okay, but we need to make more visible the line between those two things. We need to make very clear the line between those two things and say that the state part of that, the part that the state is dealing with, and the federal government in acknowledging people who have been married within the states. Remember how it used to be that Nevada, you could get married really quickly? Well, they still do. I mean, states have different marriage laws. Different waiting periods, different, you know, in Nevada, they turned it into an industry because most of the states in the country had these, you know, you gotta wait 2 weeks, you gotta wait a month, you gotta, what, you know, whatever before you get married. Nevada said you can get married with, 1 hour wait. And then the divorce laws changed, and they all changed state by state. So what we say is, if you want to have the benefits of marriage, the state will acknowledge that, and it will be acknowledged through basically you're taking an oath. I marry this person, or I bond to this person. And that oath can be before a justice of the peace, in which case it's an entirely civil event. Or that oath can be in a church or a synagogue or a mosque, in which case it's a religious event, and the state will then acknowledge it. Because when you get married, you not only have to, you know, you not only are married by the religious institution, you're also, that marriage is also acknowledged by the state. And then, as Tim pointed out, the federal government has, you know, a bunch of things that they acknowledge with that. But this really does happen at the level of the state. That's why it's being fought out in Massachusetts. And this seems to me like just the most rational way to do it. To say, let's cleave this. Let's make this line absolutely visible. And let Jerry Falwell argue with the Unitarians instead of with the Democrats. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Women over 50 and men over 40 are waking up to a surprising fact. They're already at risk of a heart attack. Because of age and other risk factors, doctors often recommend Bayer low-dose aspirin as part of a routine to help prevent a heart attack. Bayer is the leading aspirin brand, and taking Bayer for your heart is easy. Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen and ask about adding Bayer to your routine for many more great days ahead. Trust your heart to Bayer.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show.
Where we serve you food with attitude plus a heap and helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, young one, tofu, and you.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dip Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
Lyke Show.
Jody in Arlington Heights, she said, first, yesterday's show was the first time I was seriously concerned for your health. I hope you've recovered. You know, I'm fine. I get crazy. My blood pressure skyrockets. I understand that. I have a pretty good doctor who recently put me on blood pressure medicine, and it seems to be working. There have been times when I've done talk radio when I thought I was going to burst an artery, but that would make for good radio, wouldn't it?
Hey, did you hear my wife program the other night? Some bitch died right on the air. There was this popping sound. Woo, man, cool. I bet Rush couldn't do that.
Sorry, didn't mean to frighten you. You're a bit late for that.
Hey, funny just...
Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. As I was saying, this is going to be the wedge issue to end all wedge issues, and it could be the wedge issue that drives George Bush into the White House in 2004. I mean, I saw it here in Vermont. Howard Dean signed the Civil Unions Bill. And there was such a backlash. It was incredible. There were signs that sprouted up all over the state that said, take Vermont back, or take back Vermont. I mean, it's a whole movement. Bumper stickers, signs. It was incredible. People drive, they demonstrations driving around the state house, honking their horns, take back Vermont. A number of legislators in the 98, let's see, I think he signed the law in 97, and it was 98. 98 is the session I'm thinking about. I could be wrong in this, in my numbers, my recollection, but a number of state legislators, state representatives and senators, ran specifically on the platform of repealing civil unions. I mean, that was like they were single-issue candidates, and quite a few of them won in some of the more rural areas in Vermont. This was a hot issue. There are still, I mean, there's still, when I drive to Plainfield, there's still a farm out there that's got a big Take Back Vermont sign on it. It's a little funny story, the blowback on this, or the irony of this. A lot of tourists came to the state and thought that these signs meant, please buy maple syrup and take it home with you. But it was a very angry, I mean, people were like shooting each other's houses and things. I mean, there was like, you know, crimes against persons were committed and against property. And the Republicans are going to be using this thing. And if the Democrats don't figure out a way to get out ahead of this issue rather than being behind it, to get proactive instead of reactive, they're going to be in big trouble in 2004. And I think that what I'm offering is a reasonable suggestion here. But time will tell. Who knows? Let's get into more of the hard news things here in the next hour. What's going on in Iraq? What's going on with the energy bill? Foodborne illness in the United States. Why? What does that have to do with union busting? Lots of interesting stuff. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after the news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
An
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You
why
hate
not
me?
Why put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Iraqi teenagers dragged two bloodied U.S. soldiers from a wrecked vehicle and pummeled them with concrete blocks Sunday, witnesses said, describing the killings as a burst of savagery in a city once safe for Americans. Another soldier was killed by a bomb and a U.S. Allied police chief was assassinated. The U.S.-led coalition also said it grounded commercial flights after the military confirmed that a missile struck a DHL cargo plane that landed Saturday at Baghdad International Airport with its wing aflame. Nevertheless, American officers insisted they were making progress in bringing stability to Iraq. An oil pipeline near the northern city of Kirkuk was on fire Monday, and local officials said the blaze may have been caused by sabotage. Details about the incident were sketchy, said the manager of the Northern Oil Company. The fire occurred on a subsidiary line linking oil fields east of Kirkuk with the main pipeline in the region, and it was believed sabotage was to blame. Insurgents have repeatedly targeted pipelines linking the fields around Kirkuk. Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle is demanding that Republicans stop showing their first television ad of the 2004 presidential race, which he called repulsive and outrageous. The 30-second ad, which aired in Iowa over the weekend, features clips of Bush during his State of the Union address last January. It portrays Bush as a fighter of terrorism and says his opponents are now attacking the president for attacking the terrorists. Other Democrats on the Sunday talk shows joined Daschle in his criticism. Presidential candidate Wesley Clark said the ad is wrong and it violates the pledge the president made not to exploit 9/11 for political purposes. Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy called it an attempt to stifle dissent, and Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman said the ad was misleading. The Republican National Committee said it has no plans to honor Daschle's wishes. More IE America Network news after this.
Hi, I'm Morgan Freeman. America's national park system is one of the best ideas our country ever had, and I've got a lifetime of memories to prove it. But our parks are in trouble. Inadequate funding and other pressures are risking some of America's most awe-inspiring places. To help, visit www.americansfornationalparks.org or call 1-800-NATPARK. 1-800-NATPARK. There's just too much to lose.
In what may be the first case of spam rage, a computer programmer has been arrested for threatening to torture and kill employees of the company he blames for bombarding his computer with ads promising to enlarge his penis. The man was arrested on Thursday for making repeated threats to staff of the company between May and July. He threatened to send a package full of anthrax spores to the company, to disable an employee with a bullet and torture him with a power drill and ice pick, and to hunt down and castrate the employees unless they removed him from their email list. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil cold and sinus.
Quick, over to the highway.
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil cold and sinus. Use as directed.
It's time for another chapter of The Lifestyles of the Rich and Cranky. Rich people have problems too. For example, what's the use of being rich if you can't be pampered? Yet there's little to no respect for wealthy people who wallow around in luxury. So imagine the agony of the rich as they wrestle with ways to be pampered without being ridiculed for it. Take corporate jets. Your top CEOs don't travel first class. They travel their class in private jets. No lines, no wanding of their private parts, no mingling with us peons. Their new favorite is Gulfstream's G450 jet, which will fly 8 passengers 5,000 miles nonstop and PDQ. Price tag, $33 million. But that's stripped bare. You get a flyable plane for $33 million, but no interior. No seats, wall coverings, washroom, carpet, storage bins, etc. It takes another $3 or $4 million to have your plane outfitted, with an emphasis on soft and plush. Deerskin sleep seats, mahogany cabinets, Persian carpets, muted lighting, flat-screen video displays with surround sound systems, walk-in showers, and, of course, 24-karat gold plating for the fixtures. As one jet maker puts it, the finishes and furnishings should look more like the interior of a multi-million-dollar home than an airplane. Yes, but what are the small shareholders and the workers to think? They see these flying mansions as nothing but extravagant toys for over-pampered executive fat cats. CEOs get cranky when asked about this, but now they've devised a carefully crafted response. A jet encourages in-flight productivity, they claim, asserting that it's just another work tool, like a carpenter's lathe or a school teacher's book bag. This is Jim Hightower saying, if it takes Persian carpets and gold fixtures to be productive, why don't they provide these for all workers?
If you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I had to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Boy, there's a remarkable... Did you know that the AARP president, William Novelli... By the way, before I get to the... welcome back to our program. We're on IE America Radio Network. We're also on Sirius Satellite Stream, Satellite Radio Stream 145, RadioPower.org, Live365.com, IEAmericaRadio.com. Our program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics. That's 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S, 1-800-511-6227, and the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE. And if you want to find out more about, you know, our writings, our concepts of what is democracy, how can this thing work, go to TomHartman.com. You'll find it all. It'll also give you a link to our chat room, which is live and active right at the moment, and to our message boards full of messages, people posting. The AARP president, William Novelli, this guy who got the AARP in bed with the Republicans on this Medicare thing, is the founder of an ad agency called Porter Novelli. Up until this point, he'd been referred to as former advertising executive William Novelli. Well, it turns out he's the founder of a firm called Porter Novelli, and it's the firm that did the Harry and Louise ads that trashed Bill Clinton's attempts to reform health care back in the 1990s.
You get this? And before that, Novelli was an official in the Nixon administration. AARP, with, 25, 35 million members, has mostly now become an insurance company. They raise over $100 million a year selling insurance. They're putting $7 million into running these ads that you are seeing all over the television about, yes, this is the best chance to get this thing through, this Medicare bill. And Novelli, the guy who's the head of the AARP, this guy should be impeached. If you're an AARP member, you know, let them know. Get this guy out of there. Let's turn this organ and get out of selling insurance business. I mean, it's a deal with the devil. You've got, are you a membership organization, the AARP, advocating for your members, or are you a corporation that happens to be manipulating people into thinking that they, that in order to buy your product, they have to be a member and they might get some benefits? I mean, which is it? What are you really about? And now, you know, Porter Novelli, the company that orchestrated the Harry and Louise ads that brought down health care reform in the 1990s, was started and owned by William Novelli, who is now the president and CEO of the American Association of Retired Persons, AARP. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Joe in Brookings, Oregon, has some thoughts on this. Hey, Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, so this is day number 3 of the senior citizens getting stabbed in the back by the AARP and our politicians in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, not just the senior citizens. I mean, it's right across the board because everybody has to pay for it.
Oh, well, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's a good point to make. To describe what the Republicans did the other day at about dawn, really early in the morning on Saturday, of course, you know, there's supposed to be a 15-minute time limit, they say, on C-SPAN for the vote to take place. But usually what they do, of course, you know, they wrangle around trying, you know, especially if, you know, you're the majority and you've got more money to spread around and bribe members of Congress, they make the vote go on as long as they can to get the vote to go their way. Well, this was extraordinary because this time it took 3 hours long to get the job done, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
they extended it. I mean, Hastert just changed the rules and stretched the thing out and played all kinds of games because he didn't have enough votes to begin with. He had to go around and just do his little arm-twisting routine.
Yeah, that's right. And I want to describe what happened and use a sports analogy to talk about this. You see, I hear all the time, you know, well, you know, maybe if a lot of people, you know, they'd quit paying so much attention to sports and all that kind of stuff, and you know, watching games on TV all the time, maybe they'd know what's going on with politics and all that. Well, being a big sports fan myself, I'll describe why a lot of people like to watch sports and they don't follow politics very much, you know, because at least with sports, you know, if it's football, it's basketball or baseball, when the clock runs out or the last out is made, one team has more runs than the other guy or one team has more points than the other guy, the game is over. But in politics, they get to make up their own rules as they go along. That's why a lot of people are turned off completely on politics and why a lot of people don't vote, because you don't even know what the rules are, and these guys just make up their own rules as they go along. What else is new?
At least the cons are doing that. Good point, Joe, and thanks for sharing that. I appreciate the call. It's absolutely, you know, spot on. It's you know, Hastert just played games with this thing until he got what he wanted. And although, frankly, Joe, my guess is that he's not the first politician to have done that. And LBJ, for example, was famous for the way that he controlled, I believe he was a senator. But, or was he in the House? I don't remember. But in any case, when he was in Congress, the power that he wielded was mind-boggling. And the games that he used to play with that. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. If you have thoughts on this or any other topic, if you want to call and talk about it, it's fine. Phil from Florida is on the line. Hey, Phil, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, OxyContin dittos.
Yeah. This program is powered by OxyHartman. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Listen, I want to talk about something that, you know, that I think I have an idea that I think the Congress, if they had guts, could do to change something that, of an immediate problem, and that is that all the jobs going to India, Pakistan, Ireland, Mexico, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Just simply pass a law that says any company can, of course, don't interfere with their desire to export a job, but they will be obligated by statute to pay 2 years of severance at 75% of what the person made in the last year to the employee whose job goes overseas. That'll make them think twice. They can
have laws similar to that in Germany.
Yeah, I know. That's why I brought it up.
Uh-huh.
But they can do it. But it's going to cost them. It's going to cost them through the nose. So if they want to do it, let them pay for it. But in the meantime, the person gets taken care of in their family. They can do that. They can say, fine, you owe this guy 2 years severance, 75% of what he was paid.
Yeah.
And make that
now,
a federal law.
The upside of that is that it softens the damage done to our society, really,
right,
by this so-called free trade, which is the antithesis of fair trade.
Right. The freedom to exploit others.
Yeah, well, it's the freedom for corporations to exploit others. A corporation can set up citizenship in can establish residence and do business in another country in an hour and a half. If you or I, as human beings, want to try and do that, we got to go through a multi-year process of proving that we're worthwhile. Yeah. Well, it's not because money talks. It's because a corporation is a different animal than a human being.
Okay,
I mean, you can do it if you're a $30,000 corporation, or you can do it if you're a $30 million corporation.
But don't you think this would be an effective way of and make this retroactive to 2001?
Yeah. Well, my point is that it would soften the damage. But over the long term, I mean, a corporation's going to look at it, and they're going to say, as they do in Germany. I lived in Germany back in the 80s, and so I have some familiarity with the German laws. And I know that the French laws are very similar. I don't know about the rest of Europe. I'm guessing that they probably are. But if in Germany, if you fire somebody after they've worked for you for more than, I think it's 1 year, it might be 2 years, then the severance is based on how long they've worked. And after 7 or 8 years, you end up having to pay somebody about a year's worth of severance pay. And it gets very expensive to fire people. And so there's this, right. But on the other hand, in Germany right now, they have a problem because of the European Union. Which is doing something like what NAFTA is doing in the United States. It's bringing all of these the very poor countries, the very low labor costs of Eastern Europe into the Union, and manufacturers are leaving Germany right now to go to Hungary, to go to Albania, to set up factories where they can pay people. You know, the average German worker is making the equivalent of U.S. $24-$25 an hour, down to maybe $18 an hour. In Albania, you can get people for $3 an hour. And so what's happening is the German employers are looking at this and they're saying, okay, we will pay 2 years' worth of severance pay to our employees in order to move this factory. And we're just moving out to a 4-year timeline, the amount of time it's going to take for us to become profitable and then more profitable, rather than a 1-year timeline, for example, like in the United States. And so while I think your idea has some merit in terms of softening the damage, it doesn't address the underlying problem. And the underlying problem is that countries historically have had laws and tariffs and in place that require corporations to do business in particular ways, or that place, you know, for example, if you want to bring in, if you want to make shoes, and in the United States it costs $1, there's a dollar's worth of labor in a pair of shoes, and you want to make them in Malaysia where it costs 10 cents worth of labor to make that same shoes, you can do that. But when you bring those shoes into the United States to sell them, you have to pay a 90-cent tax. It's called a tariff, an import tariff, on those shoes, so that the cost to you as a corporation or as a seller, as a wholesaler, an importer, or the pseudo-manufacturer, because they outsource it, the cost to you is the same as if you made it in the United States. And then the decision doesn't become, do I export these jobs because it's going to take me, now I'm going to have to wait 3 years to make my profit instead of 1 year to make my profit. Do I still do it? Which they would still do it, like they're doing it in Germany right now. But instead, the decision becomes, Do I bring them in from Malaysia or do I make them here in the United States? The labor cost is ultimately going to be identical because the tariff laws have leveled the playing field. And so if they make a better shoe in Malaysia or a different shoe in Malaysia, that becomes a variable. But you know, rarely is that the case. And that's why we didn't have, that's why we still had a textile industry in the United States up until Reagan started tearing this stuff apart and then Clinton kicked the door open with NAFTA and GATT and WTO. So I think Phil, you've got a good idea that should be put in place and that this is something that organized labor should be picking up and running with, but I don't think that it is the solution to the problem. I think it would soften one of the symptoms of the problem.
But I sure think it's a lot better than you know, doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I agree. But I think that we should be looking at the problem itself. And the problem itself is the fact that we have kicked open, there's this conservative war on labor that has to be stopped. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is incredible. People everywhere are discovering they have 24 hours to live. With one pill a day, that's 24 hours to live without frequent heartburn. Yes, it's possible with Prilosec OTC. One pill a day can relieve heartburn for 24 hours. Holy moly, you could have zero heartburn. So, folks, get out there, because without frequent heartburn, you could have 24 hours to live it up.
One pill a day, 24 hours, zero heartburn. It's possible with Prilosec OTC. Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Show.
The computerized voting machines in the last election, our question is the theft of your vote. On our chat room here, Brain Shrub points out that H is the eighth letter of the alphabet, A is the first letter of the alphabet. So if you take that 18181, the exact number of votes that three different candidates in one county in Texas got on these computerized voting machines, and you simply convert it to letters, it becomes... Is it a conspiracy or a coincidence?
Okay, first of all, I wanted to say congratulations. We were elected to the White House by one of the narrowest margins in history. 63% of registered voters...
Wait a second. You wanted me to poll registered voters?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
I try to stay here, but my blues go walking. My blues go walking. Go out walking. I try to stay here when I'm going down. I try to stay here, but my blues go walking around.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman helping you win the water cooler wars here in the Democracy Zone on the IE America Radio Network. Our program today brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S, 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S, and the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE. In our chat room, we have a one of the participants in our chat room is apparently in Denmark listening to the program, and he says, "Tom, in Germany, they say unions are a core problem as well. Because of them, no investment, and not even by German companies is there investment going on." And he goes on to say, "See, this is the line that the corporations put out." He goes on to say, they have the same problem here in Denmark, Tom, and France, and Sweden. And that's, and my response to that is that the corporations are saying it's the unions that are causing us to have to send our jobs from Denmark to Albania. And what I'm saying is it's the failure of protective tariffs. That is, they have changed, by changing the laws, you're changing the rules of the game. Business is a game. I mean, you can think of business as a game. Absolutely. It is a game with specific rules, and the rules are defined by we the people through our legislative, our elected representatives in a democracy. And historically, one of the rules of those games, going all the way back to 1784, when the first protective tariffs were placed in the United States, and I can give you half a dozen quotes from Thomas Jefferson in favor of this, by the way. I spent the whole weekend with his writings for this book that I'm writing for Random House for this next year. And the founders were really clear on this. If you want to protect the domestic industry, if you want to protect labor, if you want to protect small businesses, if you want to protect your local businesses from overseas competition that will wipe them out because that country is poorer so they'll do it cheaper, you have tariffs. You put tariffs in place. And they took down the tariffs in Europe when they joined the European Union. We took down the tariffs in the United States with NAFTA and WTO GATT. And the result was that suddenly the rules of the game changed for the corporations. And they could now basically buy labor anywhere they wanted. It used to be that basically you had to buy labor locally. Now, the laws didn't say you had to buy labor locally. You do it with tax policy, with tariffs. And you make it so it's just the reasonable, rational thing to do, to buy labor locally. And we have to go back to that. And Europe is figuring out very quickly that they're going to have to go back to that, too, because you're seeing the Western European countries. They're just crashing and burning. Anyhow, 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Kevin has been waiting very patiently in Tampa, Florida, on the line. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Tom, how you doing today?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up with you, Kevin?
Did you happen to read yesterday Tom Friedman's op-ed piece in the Times?
I did not.
Well, it's very interesting because, as you know, he's, my opinion anyway, he's basically an apologist for the administration.
Yes.
And he wrote a very interesting article, which I don't think is talked about enough. I know you feel this way, and I do, and most of the people I know.
Kevin, if I can ask you to put that on hold for just a second. We've got a short commercial break. I think it's coming up in about 5 seconds, and I want you to finish that thought, and I don't want to jam it up before the break.
Right,
if you can just hang on for a minute, and Yeah, we are going to go to a break here as I'm looking at the clock, and it should
okay,
be
no
starting
problem.
Any second. Okay, great. Thank you. This is Tom Hartman. Oh, maybe I'm a minute off. Well, Kevin, continue anyway.
Okay.
We'll see when the music starts.
He wrote a piece which really shocked me when I saw it.
Okay, there it goes. I'm sorry, Kevin.
See you after the break.
Hey, just stay on hold there. We'll see you on the other side of the break. We'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, exposing the con in conservatives.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Deciding how much of a chemical is safe for people is not just a question of science, it's also one of values. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Government regulators use risk assessments to establish acceptable exposure levels to certain chemicals. Risk assessments are based on scientific research, leading to laws and regulations that might seem objective and sound. But Colleen Moore, a psychologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, says these rules also need to include a community's values. In her book, Silent Scourge, Moore argues that after data on a pollutant have been collected, citizens should help decide what actions to take.
A numerical risk assessment is a way for a community to come together and decide their values. But at present, risk assessment is not being used that way in our society. And so one of the important points that I make in the book is that we need to examine each step in the risk assessment as citizens and activist groups of citizens and also industry and say, well, is this the level of protection that I want?
For example, say a particular chemical is thought to pose a 1 in a million chance of causing deterioration in motor skills. Some communities might see that as an acceptable risk. Others might want tougher or more lenient standards. Moore says pollutants that affect motor skills and mental abilities need especially close evaluation.
In any risk assessment that involves a behavioral outcome like IQ test scores or children's fine motor functioning, where the scores vary continuously, the first thing that the risk assessors need to do is set a cutoff for what counts as a negative outcome.
Moore says people need to speak out about what risks they're willing to accept, and regulators should include those opinions in their decisions. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of you may be alarmed by subversive propaganda spread by that liberal media filter, Mike Malloy, who distorts the truth every weeknight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Rest assured, our sources at Fox News confirm that we have a fabulous, booming economy and enjoy daily glorious victories in the numerous fronts of the ongoing terror wars. And besides, any problems we're experiencing are all Clinton's fault. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The Mississippi Delta was shining like a national guitar. I am following the river down the highway.
cradle of the Civil War. I'm going to Graceland, Graceland.
All right, down through the highway of the Civil War. Paul Simon says there, and that's a really interesting point on our chat room. Europe Hello, our listener in Denmark, who's live in the chat room, says the U.S. was the blueprint for the European Union. He says, Tom, I still think the core idea of the European Union was right. Removal of tariffs, in my opinion, was a natural step. I think the U.S. was the blueprint for the whole EU. And the point, and my response was, but the USA went through a civil war over just these issues. That's the lesson of union that the European Union misses, is that we ended up with the very developed and labor-expensive North and the very agricultural and labor-inexpensive South. And as the textile mills and things started moving toward the South, there were these enormous... You ended up with basically two economic systems. And the South finally said, hey, we're just going to separate ourselves because I don't want to revisit the whole history of the Civil War. And, of course, there's dueling histories of the Civil War. But the point is that we went through a civil war over this kind of stuff. And I have a feeling the EU is in for some really rough time. But anyhow, that's a side note. Kevin in Tampa, you were talking about Tom Friedman's article. I wanted to let you finish that up. And then we got a couple of other callers here we got to get to, too. So you were saying?
Yeah, there was some kind of a ceremony last week in London for recipients of Marshall scholarships that England gives as a thank you to Americans for the Marshall Plan.
Mm-hmm.
And Prince Charles officiated. And since the administration was over there, they had Colin Powell scheduled to speak, mm-hmm. which was seemed kind of appropriate, I guess.
Sure.
Except at the last minute, security canceled his visit. And the reason was they were scared. And what Tom Friedman said is we're going around it all wrong. And this one sentence really drives it home. He says, what good is driving bin Laden into a cave if our Secretary of State has to live in a bubble? And he goes on and says later, quoting somebody else from Israel, freedom's the only guardian of freedom. Seems like a direct attack on the Patriot Act. But, you know, there's not enough talk, I think, that by giving in to the terrorists and what happened on 9/11 and all these other events that happen around the world, they're winning. We're not.
Well, yeah, and the exact same point is made by George Soros in an article in the Atlantic Monthly. It's in the Atlantic Online,
you've been
December
that.
2003
He's a great man.
Yeah.
He's putting his money where his mouth is.
Yeah, he is. And he says, these principles can be summed up as follows. International relations are relations of power, not law. Power prevails and law legitimizes what prevails. In other words, he says this is the Bush administration's position, and it's wrong. He says the United States is unquestionably the dominant position in the post-Cold War world. It is therefore in a position to impose its views, interests, and values. The world would benefit from adopting those values because the American model has demonstrated its superiority. Again, this is what the Bush administration is saying. He says that the Clinton and the first Bush administrations failed to use, again, this is the position of the neocons, failed to use the full potential of American force, and this must be corrected. The U.S. must find a way to assert its supremacy in the world. He says this foreign policy is part of a comprehensive ideology customarily referred to as neoconservatism, though I prefer to describe it as a crude form of social Darwinism. And he says it's leading us into a disaster, into an absolute disaster.
It's in a disaster now.
Yeah, we're full-blown. We're right in the middle of it.
I mean, look at those guys had their throat slit this weekend in Iraq.
Yeah, and you can't have an insurgency without popular support. If you don't have at least a 100-to-1 ratio of average non-active people supporting every insurgent, and ideally a 1,000-to-1 ratio, then an insurgency is simply not possible. And, you know, from revolutionary America to today in Iraq, and we think that we can find the leaders, we'll cut the heads off. It was the same kind of logic we used in Vietnam, and it simply doesn't work. Kevin, thanks for the call.
Okay.
And thanks for sharing that with us. I appreciate very much your calling in. This is a very real issue. The failed foreign policy of the Bush administration, in fact, our question for this hour, had the failed Bush domestic and international policies led us toward the end of America as the major superpower and role model for the world? And I say yes, the world is no longer looking to us, either for protection or as a role model, and that's a disaster. It's a It's a disaster on every dimension. It's a spiritual disaster in the sense that democracy is an extraordinary and powerful archetype. It's a democratic disaster. It's a political disaster. It's an economic disaster ultimately, because they're moving their money, you know, all over the world. People are starting to boycott American goods. They're coming up with a gold dinar now in the United Arab Emirates. You know, different currencies. The euro is replacing the dollar in part out of spite. You know, we've got this thing in the Bloomberg News here. French-German firms banned from rebuilding Iraq. French and German firms can't bid to be prime contractors on reconstruction work in Iraq worth as much as $18.6 billion, a Pentagon official said this on November 20th. Quote, we expect it to be Iraqi coalition partners and American contractors, end quote, said retired Navy Admiral David Nash, director of the Pentagon office that will administer the contracts. And the rest of the world is going, okay, hey, you guys take a hike. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. Jim in Detroit's on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hello. About this civil union, gay marriage issue, or foreign policy, or unemployment, or whatever it is, you're missing the whole point here politically. See, this is where the good guys always get tripped up. If you're approaching this logically, and you're looking for a solution. But this is too simple. This is too logical for Republicans to accept. They need divisive, divide and conquer wedge issues to further their hate war. The Republicans don't want an answer or a solution to any argument. They just want the argument itself.
Oh, I know, and that's why I'm suggesting that the Democrats have to offer a coherent and cogent answer. If they don't get ahead of this issue, they're going to find themselves behind it, and they are going to be crushed.
This is why I always ask the candidates, whether it's in writing or whether it's on a call-in show, I ask them not about their positions on taxes or foreign policy, health care, unemployment, war. I don't ask them, we pretty well know how we all sleep on this. What I want to know is how they're going to take this fight to these Republican punks. That's the issue. I mean, we're looking for logical answers to solutions to arguments, and they just want the argument.
Well, I would like to see both, Jim, and that's one of the things that impresses me about a number of our Democratic candidates right now, is that they are actually talking back, they're being pugnacious, they're saying, hey, okay, you want to fight, I'll give you a fight, and by the way, I've got the facts on my side.
There you go.
Let's have both. And we need to be encouraging those who are speaking up. And it'll be interesting to see this debate that's coming up. Is it this week, the debate, the next Democratic debate's going to be?
Well, this is...
Or next.
I just can't tell you what all is happening here. This is just too amazing for me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got to go.
Yeah, Jim, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Jim in Detroit. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Marianne in Arcadia, California has been patiently waiting. Thank you, Marianne, for hanging out on the line with us. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Yes, I'm really grateful for your program and this refresher course in history of the corporations in this country.
Well, thank you.
Anyway, what I'm calling about is, I think it's just unconscionable that a person can make millions as a CEO of a medical insurance or a hospital on sick people. So isn't there anyone in Congress that would have the guts to introduce a bill to put a cap on either of those?
Well, you know, it used to be illegal to make a profit on sick people, by and large. It used to be that hospitals had to be run by nonprofit corporations.
Right.
But now
you've
got, look at Bill Frist, the head of the Republicans in the Senate. His family owns the largest private hospital chain in America, and they've paid, according to NPR this morning, $1.4 billion in fines for fraud against the United States government. In other words, they have been convicted of crimes, or they have pled guilty, and they've paid fines for these things, and they're still in business. And this is the guy who's running the Senate for the Republicans. This is part of the problem, Marianne. I mean,
and what's going to happen there? Will they pay those fines, or will they leave
them
out of it?
They already have. I mean, they're making so much money, it's just a cost of doing business.
Okay. So when was that, and when did it go away then, from that medical corporations didn't have to be nonprofit?
I don't have a good history of it. I know that when I was growing up, when I was a kid, and a lot of this has to do with state-by-state laws, that when I was a kid in Michigan, Blue Cross Blue Shield had to be nonprofit, and all the hospitals were nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
And now most of the hospitals are for-profit, and most of the insurance companies are for-profit. And I know that in Vermont here right now, there's a big fight going on over whether Blue Cross Blue Shield should be allowed to transfer from nonprofit to for-profit. So I think this is not a federal change. I think this is a change that's been creeping seen across America over the last 20 years as the conservative agenda has been advancing like a cancer across the nation, and it's been going state by state by state.
Yeah, but Blue Cross is not nonprofit. I mean, their premiums are one of the highest.
Well, they go they reincorporate
in
every
California.
State.
Blue
Cross, yeah, in California it may be for profit. Here in Vermont, it's not for profit. Vermont has the most restrictive insurance laws in the nation. And there are a lot of insurance companies that won't do business in Vermont because we have laws that prevent insurance companies from ripping people off, and they don't like that.
Right. I also wanted to ask you, how can I find out or look up about how much the CEOs and the various insurance companies and hospitals make?
There is a site, there's a website, and I think it's called CEOWatch.org, although I could be wrong. I know
CEO,
the AFL, you might want to...
Watch?
Yeah, but you might want to plug that into Google. I'm not really certain of that. I know the AFL-CIO has an excellent site that tracks CEO pay. So you might want to start with the www.aflcio.org.
Oh, okay.
The AFL-CIO. I don't know if they break it down by industry, but they do have a lot of information on CEO pay there, and that would be a good place to start. Marianne,
okay.
I got to move on. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it very much. It is 15 minutes before the hour here. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, exposing the con and conservative. Mike in Birmingham, Alabama is on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Tom. Oh, Mike dropped. Sorry. Okay, let's go to Storm in Northern Illinois. Hey, Storm, how are you?
Good, Tom, and I hope you're doing fine, too.
I'm alive and kicking. What's up?
Tom, I'd like to use your program to respond to a comment that the Federal Reserve Chairman said last week.
Okay.
Alan Greenspan said, I'm very concerned about the creeping protectionism across America these days.
Yeah, well, I saw that in the Wall Street Journal.
Mr. Greenspan, us Americans are very concerned about the creeping fascism that's gripping our country and has been attacking us for a couple decades now. And it's about time that the American worker and our children and grandchildren get some protection from you fascists.
Amen. Amen. Well said, Ken. Ken, or Storm, I'm sorry. Well said, Storm. And it's absolutely real. I mean, the dictionary definition of fascism, according to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, 1987, is the merging of business and state interests. And here we go. We got CEOs as our president and vice president. Welcome to the wonderful world of Mussolini. Storm, thank you very much for the call and for the comment. I appreciate it very much. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Ken in... Oh, by the way, our board operator, Steve Damschroeder, tells me that the debate is tonight at 9 p.m., so cool. Check it out. Ken in Georgia is on the line. Hey, Ken, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
I'm here. How are you?
I've got a question for you. I don't know. I mean, unless, and of course, this is really the big issue. If a Democratic candidate really botches the gay marriage thing, then it could be a problem, and that's very possible. But otherwise, is this really, anybody who thinks this is a big issue, wouldn't they have a tendency not to vote for the Democrat anyway?
Probably. But I live in the only state that's actually lived through this, and I can tell you that what happened here in Vermont was when civil unions passed, I believe that Howard Dean got elected one more time. I think this happened in 97, and Agrab, you can correct me if I'm wrong here on the chat room, because I know he lives in Vermont. But I think it happened in 97, and Dean got reelected in 98. But in any case, the point is that after the civil unions thing went down in Vermont, there were a significant number of legislators who lost their seats, Democrats who supported it, who lost their seats, and a significant number of Republicans who rose up out of nowhere across the state, ran for public office solely on the issue of repealing civil unions. And the entire first half of the first year of the legislative session here in Vermont, in the year following when the civil unions law was signed by Howard Dean, was spent arguing about a constitutional amendment that would, number one, repealing the law, number two, putting into place a constitutional amendment, defining a marriage as man and a woman, and all this kind of stuff. And it was incredible how much juice, how much flame, storm and fury. What's the, you know, there's a phrase there that's escaping me, was generated by this issue. I mean, it brought people out of the woodwork. And it didn't, and by and large, it wasn't the liberals. It was the social conservatives or the social paranoids who it brought out. And I think anybody who underestimates the power of this issue to activate the Republican base and to even bring people into the Republican base who have never been Republicans is making a huge mistake.
Frame the issue, then, therefore, and cast the issue in a certain light. Shouldn't we be turning it on its head and showing them for the intolerant theocrats that they are?
Well, that's my suggestion. I'm, you know, absolutely. I mean, you've got all these independents who can go either way, and the very often, just in asking the question, you've already won or lost the argument. It's a, you know, I remember that time Richard Nixon was asked a really tough question by a reporter, and he said, "No, and I also don't beat my wife anymore." And, you know, the point being, you know, the old question: do you still beat your wife? Well, no matter how you answer it, I mean, you've lost. And the Democrats have to figure out a way to frame this issue and get it out there and get it out there fast, because the Republicans are going to take it. They're going to frame it as the Democrats are in favor of gay marriage, and that's going to be the end of religion as well as culture and government. And the Democrats have to separate the religious component of it from the secular, the governmental, or they're just going to be in terrible trouble, in my opinion. Mike, thanks for the call. This is Tom Hartman, the place where smart people get their news. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com, or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. But judge for yourself. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions and we will send you a free sampler. Yes, a free sampler. 2 full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Tom Hartman Show.
Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board. The doorbell rang and I answered the door just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush. What a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, "I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah's Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary." How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, "Well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect."
For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Tom Hartman, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. Here on the IE America Radio Network, my friend Rama Schneider, the Vermont talk show host who occasionally fills in for me on this program, tells me that in 1997, Howard Dean, that was when the civil unions thing went down here in Vermont. The Dean got reelected in 98 and in 2000. And the 2000 election, Dean got 50.1% of the vote, or maybe that's the 98 in any case. But he says 63% of the people did not vote against civil unions because the vote was split. The Anthony Pallina, who was the progressive candidate, we don't have much of a Green Party here, but we have a progressive party here in Vermont, got 13% of the vote. And then so the Republican only ended up with 37%. But the Republican was Ruth Dwyer, and she was an she was just as about as far to the right as you can. I mean, she made Newt Gingrich look like a liberal. So anyway, here's a news alert. Oh, and Louise tells me the debate actually is this afternoon at 4 o'clock, and it's going to be rebroadcast tonight at 9 p.m. So hopefully that's the latest and most accurate of the news. The Democratic debate. I think, you know, it should be getting more publicity. I read two newspapers this morning, and I somehow missed it. Anyhow, I get this email from the Peace and Justice folks. The privatization. This is from Stephen Levine or Levine, I'm assuming, of the Santa Fe Institute for Peace and Justice. Did you know the firms that are buying the Iraqi businesses cannot find insurance for their investments because the sales are illegal under Iraqi law? The Iraqi Constitution says it's against the law to sell an Iraqi-owned company to a foreign government. And that this is the reason why the U.S. is trying to hurry up this thing, you know, in the next few months, to establish, quote, sovereignty, end quote, so that they can proceed with the sale of Iraqi assets. Amazing. This is Tom Hartman. We got to do something about this, and we got to do it in 2004 November at the ballot box. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. truth, and common sense in broadcasting.
Exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
To see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Iraqi teenagers dragged two bloodied U.S. soldiers from a wrecked vehicle and pummeled them with concrete blocks Sunday, witnesses said, describing the killings as a burst of savagery in a city once safe for Americans. Another soldier was killed by a bomb and a U.S. Allied police chief was assassinated. The U.S.-led coalition also said it grounded commercial flights after the military confirmed that a missile struck a DHL cargo plane that landed Saturday at Baghdad International Airport with its wing aflame. Nevertheless, American officers insisted they were making progress in bringing stability to Iraq. Five U.S. soldiers were killed and seven injured when their helicopter crashed Sunday near the American military headquarters north of the Afghan capital, U.S. Central Command said. The soldiers were involved in an ongoing U.S. military operation dubbed Mountain Resolve, taking place in the east of the country. A U.S. military helicopter crashed today near Bagram, Afghanistan, said a statement sent by email from Central Command in Tampa, Florida. Early reports indicate seven service members were injured and at least five service members were killed. It is not clear what caused the crash, and the military said it was investigating. Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle is demanding that Republicans stop showing their first television ad of the 2004 presidential race, which he called repulsive and outrageous. The 30-second ad, which aired in Iowa over the weekend, features clips of Bush during his State of the Union address last January. It portrays Bush as a fighter of terrorism and says his opponents are now attacking the president for attacking the terrorists. Other Democrats on the Sunday talk shows joined Daschle in his criticism. Presidential candidate Wesley Clark said the ad is wrong and it violates the pledge the president made not to exploit 9/11 for political purposes. Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy called it an attempt to stifle dissent, and Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman said the ad was misleading. The Republican National Committee said it has no plans to honor Daschle's wishes. More after this.
Hi, I'm Morgan Freeman. America's national park system is one of the best ideas our country ever had, and I've got a lifetime of memories to prove it. But our parks are in trouble. Inadequate funding and other pressures are risking some of America's most awe-inspiring places. To help, visit www.americansfornationalparks.org or call 1-800-NATPARK, 1-800-NATPARK. That's just too much to lose.
A 19-year-old Norwegian has been convicted of drunken driving, even though he was a passenger, had a sober designated driver, and didn't even have the keys to start the car that was turned off. The man and a friend were on their way home from a party in April when they stopped at a gas station to buy some food. The man reached over from the passenger seat to change a CD in the car's stereo and hit the manual gear stick. The car went into neutral and started to roll. A police officer was watching and detained him for drunken driving. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
It's time for another chapter of The Lifestyles of the Rich and Cranky. Rich people have problems, too. For example, what's the use of being rich if you can't be pampered? Yet there's little to no respect for wealthy people who wallow around in luxury. So imagine the agony of the rich as they wrestle with ways to be pampered without being ridiculed for it. Take corporate jets. Your top CEOs don't travel first class. They travel their class in private jets. No lines, no wanding of their private parts, no mingling with us peons. Their new favorite is Gulfstream's G450 jet, which will fly 8 passengers 5,000 miles nonstop and PDQ. Price tag, $33 million. But that's stripped bare. You get a flyable plane for $33 million, but no interior. No seats, wall coverings, washroom, carpet, storage bins, etc. It takes another $3 or $4 million to have your plane outfitted, with an emphasis on soft and plush. Deerskin sleep seats, mahogany cabinets, Persian carpets, muted lighting, flat-screen video displays with surround sound systems, walk-in showers, and, of course, 24-karat gold plating for the fixtures. As one jet maker puts it, the finishes and furnishings should look more like the interior of a multi-million-dollar home than an airplane. Yes, but what are the small shareholders and the workers to think? They see these flying mansions as nothing but extravagant toys for over-pampered executive fat cats. CEOs get cranky when asked about this, but now they've devised a carefully crafted response. A jet encourages in-flight productivity, they claim, asserting that it's just another work tool, like a carpenter's lathe or a school teacher's book bag. This is Jim Hightower saying, if it takes Persian carpets and gold fixtures to be productive, why don't they provide these for all workers?
You hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, as
you
I was know. Expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX. And the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE. Have the failed Bush domestic and international policies led us toward the end of America as a major superpower and a role model for the world? Many think so. And we see the situation where now we are rushing the Iraqis to gain, quote, sovereignty, end quote, even though it might mean Iraqi civil war, even though it might mean an Islamic republic. we're pushing this thing as fast as we can. And the original reason why people thought that Bush was pushing this, why he had this sudden change of heart 2 weeks ago, was because he was going to do this so that the Iraqi governing council, once they had sovereignty, once they had the power of being sovereign, of writing a new constitution, of representing themselves in the United Nations, that maybe then Europe would get involved. But the Europeans are not involved because, well, for example, we have Navy Admiral David Nash, who just said French and German contractors can't bid. Sorry. This is $87 billion of American money. It's going to American companies like Halliburton and Bechtel. Only nations that supported the war can bid for the 25 prime contracts the U.S. plans to award between now and February 1st, according to this guy. So, no, it wasn't about bringing in the Europeans, because they're saying, basically, you know, let us participate in the rebuilding, let us share in the oil, and maybe we'll consider putting some of the lives of our young men and women at stake. And America says, no, sorry, we've got the oil, and we're selling off the companies. And the rules under which we've decided that we're going to sell off Iraq are that the American corporations who buy the Iraqi assets, the assets of the nation of Iraq, can repatriate 100% of the revenue of the resources. In other words, they can take all of the cash that they earn in Iraq and bring it back to the United States. There's no obligation to leave any there. There's no obligation to reinvest any there. There's no obligation to do anything for the Iraqis. We're going to build it up with American taxpayer dollars and then turn it over to American corporations. And it turns out that the Bush administration had this change of heart because the Iraqi constitution currently forbids this. But if they can get a governing body in quickly enough that will allow this, then the American companies that are buying the Iraqi businesses will be able to get insurance because they'll be legal, and they will then be willing to actually do business in Iraq. I'm speechless. I recently bought copies of two books published in the early 1890s. One called A History of the Democratic Party, the other called A History of the Republican Party. And it was fascinating to read because the author of these two books, I found them on eBay, you know. So every now and then you find some gem, you know, the antique books. I mean, these books are actually published in the 1890s, late 1880s, early 1890s, and they were like $30 or something. I mean, it's just somebody had not noticed them, or maybe they're not worth that much or whatever. I don't know, but I wanted to read them for what they had to say. And they talked about the corruption of these parties. In fact, it's interesting that Abraham Lincoln gave a speech in 1859. It was actually, he wrote a speech to be delivered on his behalf because he couldn't show up for Jefferson's birthday. Now, this was before he was even running for president. And in that speech, he talked about how the Democratic Party had been founded by Jefferson. It was called the Democratic Republicans. And then they dropped the word Republicans later on, and it's now called the Democratic Party. They dropped the word Republicans, I think, in the 1820s or 1830s. That the Democratic Party was founded by Jefferson, but that by the time of the 1850s and 1860s, this was founded by Jefferson in the 1790s, the late 1790s. The split became, you know, the split between the Federalists, and then there was the Democrats, and there were the Republicans, and Jefferson brought together the Democrats and Republicans into the Democratic Republican Party. They were all the anti-Federalists. That the ideals of Jefferson, of self-governance, of democracy, of keeping wealth and power out of political power. See, I mean, there was this very clear notion that Jefferson had, that there is political power, there is economic power, which can be wielded by wealthy individuals or by corporations. There is military power, which is wielded by armies. And there is religious power, which is wielded by popes and religious leaders. And Jefferson was very clear, among others, among the founders, that every time we had lived under tyranny, every time that anything democratic had failed, it had failed because political power had been contaminated by and then ultimately seized by one of those other three forms of power. If political power was seized by warlords, you had a military junta or you had a king. If military power was seized by religious power, you had the Crusades. And if military power was seized by wealth, you had feudalism. And sometimes it was seized by both wealth and warlords, in which case you had kings who were projecting empire, as King George III was trying to do. And Jefferson was really clear on all this stuff. And that's why they wrote the Constitution the way they did, and they set this country up the way they did, to make it illegal for corporations to participate in politics, so that politics could be uncorrupted by either religion, the military, or wealth. With regard to the military, the way that they wanted to prevent warlord presidents from ever arising was they put the military under the hands of a civilian, first of all, that is the president of the United States, an elected civilian. And then they even took it one step further. They stripped from that elected civilian, who was the head of the military, the right and the authority to declare war. The president, legally, according to the Constitution, cannot declare war. Only Congress can declare war. So, you know, there was this clear definition, and Lincoln, in this speech, told the story about two drunken men who were having a fight, and in the course of the fight, they ended up switching their coats. One man's coat ended up on the other man's body, and the other man's coat ended up on the you know, like this. They ended up switching their coats. The fight was so rough and tumble. And Lincoln said that the Democrat and Republican parties had been like those two drunken men, that the Republicans were the heirs of the Whigs and the Federalists. The Federalists died out, were replaced by the Whigs briefly, and then the Whigs died out, and they were replaced by the Republicans. The modern Republican Party was actually founded in, as I recall, 1858, I think, was either 56 or 58, in the 1850s. And it was brought about as the party of reform, because the Democratic Party at that point had become corrupted by wealth. It had become the party of power and privilege. And so Lincoln said, isn't it ironic that the power, and this was on Jefferson's birthday that he wrote this speech, isn't it ironic that the party that was founded on the principles of Jefferson has abandoned them? And that as a spokesman for the party that was coming forward, the Republicans, to pick up the principles of Jefferson, he had been invited to speak to a Republican gathering celebrating Jefferson's birthday. And you can find this easily on the Internet. Just, you know, Google on Lincoln's speech on Jefferson's birthday and you'll get it. And it's interesting. It's only about five paragraphs long. It's a short thing, but it's brilliant. It's brilliant. Well, now these two drunken men have had their fight and they've switched coats again. And the Republicans, who were the party of reform and of returning to democratic principles, and I really believe that Lincoln believed to a large extent in those things. I mean, that's the letter in which he says all glory, all hail to Jefferson, who in the midst and trials and tribulations of a dark time had the foresight, and I don't remember the exact quote, but the foresight and the courage to hold to his principles. But after the Civil War, after Lincoln's assassination, the Republican Party got corrupted mostly by the railroads originally first in the 1870s. And the U.S. Grant, the Ulysses S. Grant Republican administration, became so corrupted by railroad bribery scandals that to his own party, the Republican Party, refused to run him for president again. And ever since then, the Republicans have been the party of the corporate power. And the Democrats, well, they've gone through their cycles. But particularly since the election of John Kennedy, and the end of segregation in the United States, the Democrats have once again become, to a large extent, to some extent, let's say, to tip my hat to you, Tim, in Connecticut, to some extent, the party of Jefferson's ideals. And we see parties like the Greens and the Progressives rising up and saying, no, we'd really like to go back to Jefferson's ideals. But the Republicans have completely sold out, and probably a third to a half of the Democrats in Congress have sold out. And so we see this situation where, you know, the United States, our question, have the failed Bush domestic and international policies led us toward the end of America as the major superpower and a role model for the world? Yes, and this is why. You got a similar pattern in education. Over $75 million worth of grants now, under the new No Child Left Behind program, have been given to groups, right-wing foundations, dedicated to privatizing education in America. Do you get that? The public education, federal public education money, is being given to right-wing foundations dedicated to destroying federal public education in the United States. $75 million so far. It is from People for the American Way. It's mind-boggling. We have to wake people up. We have to change this. And we can. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network discussing solutions and not false promises. We'll be right back.
Women over 50 and men over 40 are waking up to a surprising fact. They're already at risk of a heart attack. Because of age and other risk factors, doctors often recommend Bayer low-dose aspirin as part of a routine to help prevent a heart attack. Bayer is the leading aspirin brand, and taking Bayer for your heart is easy. Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen and ask about adding Bayer to your routine for many more great days ahead. Trust your heart to Bayer.
Dermarest, the psoriasis solution, asks,
what's complete freedom? For me, it's an open road with the top down. It's my bare arms getting warmed by the sun. It's my bare arms without a trace of psoriasis.
Complete freedom, brought to you by the complete relief of Dermarest psoriasis. Unlike brands which only relieve itching and inflammation, Dermarest psoriasis also removes the embarrassing scales, allowing healthy skin to grow.
Healthy skin? That's complete freedom.
Dermarest, the psoriasis solution.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network. Every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet.
We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Oh, I am just a student, sir, and only want to learn. But it's hard to read through the rise and smoke from the books that you like to burn. So I'd like to make a promise, and I'd like to make a vow, that when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. Oh, you've given me a number and you've taken off my name. To get around this campus, why, I almost need a plane. And you're supporting Chiang Kai-shek while I'm supporting Mao. So when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now.
Welcome back. It's Talk Radio for the rest of us. Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And if you've got something to say and you want to say it now, our number is 1-800-TALK. Yes, 1-800-825-5937. Trish in Idaho, one of the folks in our chat room, which you can get to by going to TomHartman.com and clicking the chat button. It'll take you to a CompuServe form. You click the chat button there, and boom, you're in. Trish says, neocons equal dominatrix. Lots of leather and lots of whipping boys. She says, it's not my bag, baby. Speaking of which, you got to be careful of the emails you get, and whether you choose to answer them. A German accused, this from the BBC today, a German accused of killing and eating a man he met on a website for cannibals has expressed regret for his actions. Armin Muse, who is awaiting trial, told a German newspaper he wants to deter other people from copying him. He met a 43-year-old Bernd Jürgen Brands in early 2001 after Mr. Muse advertised on websites for, quote, young, well-built men aged 18 to 30 to slaughter, end quote. Mr. Muse told investigators he took Mr. Brands back to his home where Mr. Brands agreed to have his a piece of his anatomy cut off, which Mr. Muse then flambéed and served up to eat together. Mr. Muse says he then killed Mr. Brands with his consent, recording the two-hour event on video. The trouble you can get into when you open your email. Mr. Muse now says he wants to write his life story with the aim of deterring anyone who wanted to copy him. Disturbingly, now this is where it gets very strange. This is, I'm reading from the BBC news story here. Today's BBC. Disturbingly, a number of websites dedicated to Mr. Muse have appeared with people advertising for willing victims. Muse says he believes there are about 800 cannibals in Germany alone. Turns out cannibalism is not technically illegal under German law. So they are trying to simply prosecute him for murder. Yeah, I know. I'm looking at the chat room. They're going, Tom, you edited that story. Yeah, I did. I did. This is the family hour here. Strange events. I got Michael in the Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. gave me economic theory. We were talking about economic theory last week. He says basically there's two kinds of profit, normal profit and economic profit. And for a market to be efficient, economic profit must equal zero in all companies. This is an interesting concept. Basically, what it means is that if a company is making, quote, excess profit, what that does is it opens up a window for other companies to come in and compete, right? Because if they can do business at the same cost, they can, and eventually it'll drive things down to the point where everybody's making the same profit, which is the economic profit. So everyone's making the normal profit, and the economic profit drops to zero. And he says that where this becomes out of place, and this is the point that I was making last week, is when you've got distortions in the marketplace, where you have people making ridiculous amounts of profit, big pharma, big oil, because of highly inelastic demand and very few competing firms, and because of the participation of government in the workplace. I mean, this new Medicare bill says that the government cannot negotiate by law with drug companies to get cheaper deals. I mean, what? Well, of course, that part of the law was written by the drug companies. So that's how it works. You're listening to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Deciding how much of a chemical is safe for people is not just a question of science, it's also one of values. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Government regulators use risk assessments to establish acceptable exposure levels to certain chemicals. Risk assessments are based on scientific research, leading to laws and regulations that might seem objective and sound. But Colleen Moore, a psychologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, says these rules also need to include a community's values. In her book, Silent Scourge, Moore argues that after data on a pollutant have been collected, citizens should help decide what actions to take.
A numerical risk assessment is a way for a community to come together and decide their values. But at present, risk assessment is not being used that way in our society. And so one of the important points that I make in the book is that we need to examine each step in the risk assessment as citizens and activist groups of citizens and also industry and say, well, is this the level of protection that I want?
For example, say a particular chemical is thought to pose a 1 in a million chance of causing deterioration in motor skills. Some communities might see that as an acceptable risk. Others might want tougher or more lenient standards. Moore says pollutants that affect motor skills and mental abilities need especially close evaluation.
In any risk assessment that involves a behavioral outcome like IQ test scores or children's fine motor functioning, where the scores vary continuously, the first thing that the risk assessors need to do is set a cutoff for what counts as a negative outcome.
Moore says people need to speak out about what risks they're willing to accept, and regulators should include those opinions in their decisions. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
Yeah.
Andy Dave Rush here, inviting you to listen to Home Improvement USA. Ken Walchek from Chicago's number one hardware store, Clark Devon Hardware. John Seip from United Marketing Force. Jay Brentlinger from Orban. And, of course, Danny Lipford from today's Homeowner Television Show. Take your home improvement questions. Our guests include industry experts from across the country. We've been America's most useful talk show for 10 years. So join us for Home Improvement USA every Saturday, 2 to 4 Eastern, and rebroadcast 8 to 10 Eastern right here on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh man, look at my life. 24 and there's so much more. Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of two. Love lost, such a cost. Give me things that don't get lost, like a coin that won't get tossed, rolling home to you.
And welcome back. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You know, this story that has been out recently, that about the was it a Chi-Chi's restaurant, this Mexican restaurant where all these people got sick, and I don't know if I think maybe a few of them died even as a result of contamination of scallions. Yeah, killed three people and sickened hundreds. Hepatitis A, which is the type of hepatitis that is transmitted by contaminated water. But the water, in order for the hepatitis to get into the water, hepatitis doesn't just appear in water. The water has to be contaminated by urine or feces. It has to be contaminated by human waste, sewage. And having traveled quite a bit in Mexico and other parts of the planet where they don't quite have their act together in regard to separating the water supply from the sewage supply, I can tell you that there are, particularly in the rural areas of Mexico, there are places where the water is not safe to drink because it's contaminated by sewage. And you get things like Hep A or other diseases that are, you know, just people are continuously recycling. And the story, what I find interesting is that nobody in the corporate-owned press in America, the corporate media in America, is discussing the real story behind the story, which is the fact that, first of all, when the USDA, or when the Food and Drug Administration, rather, tested 1,003 samples of fresh produce from 21 countries in 1999 and 959 domestic samples and compared them, they found about 400% more of the foreign samples were contaminated than were the domestic samples. 4.4% versus 1.3%. About four times as many. It's between three and four times as many. And why? Because we're importing food from third world countries into the United States. Dr. Glenn Morris, chairman of the Department of, this is from the New York Times, I'm reading, this is an article, Foodborne Illness from Produce on the Rise by Marion Burroughs. Dr. Glenn Morris, chairman of the Department of Epidemiology and Preventative Medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, says, "It's a huge problem and not one easy to solve. Produce is emerging as an important cause of foodborne illness in this country." Well, now, why would that be? I mean, the CDC estimates that every year in America, 5,000 people die. I mean, more than 9/11. 5,000 people die, and 76 million, that's more than the number of people who vote in this country, become ill from food poisoning. In 1996 and 97, large outbreaks of foodborne illness were traced to Guatemalan raspberries. From 2000 through 2004, three large outbreaks of salmonella traced to Mexican cantaloupes. Why is this? Because 23.2% of the food that you find in the supermarket and in your restaurants, 23.2% of the food that we eat in the United States, we import from third world countries that don't have the same sanitation standards we have. As Dr. Taux, T-A-U-X-E, of the Centers for Disease Control said, as far as I know, there is not a mandatory requirement that water used to rinse or ice or wash vegetables be potable. Potable meaning safe to drink. He says there are guidelines recommending this, but in terms of fairness, we don't require other countries to meet standards that aren't required in this country. So here we got, and what is it all about? It's all about, and just to make it even worse, now, the FDA's lack of regulatory authority and understaffing. The FDA is who's responsible for checking our food supply of this type, of the imported food. Of 420,000 places where food is held, processed, or transported, the FDA has a total of 476 inspectors. Now, get those numbers. 420,000 places, 476 inspectors. The Department of Agriculture, on the other hand, which is only responsible for meat and poultry, there are 6,500 domestic plants. They have 7,600 inspectors. But it's more important for us to rebuild Iraq than to have safe food. And even the larger issue than that is, in my mind, why aren't we simply growing this stuff here in the United States? Why are we importing all of it? Why? Well, it has to do with NAFTA and free trade. It has to do with increasing the profits of agribiz corporations while, in the meantime, 5,000 Americans die every year. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Cindy in Tampa, Florida, is on the line. Cindy was on the line. I guess she's gone. Cindy, feel free to call back. I'd be pleased to take your call. And thanks for waiting as long as you did. Here's moving along. I've got a bunch of stories here I want to get through. And if you want to call on any topic, it's fine. Just, you know, give us a call. This is a shocking story in the Washington Post on Saturday. Oh, Cindy's back? Okay, great. Hey, Cindy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much. And if you guys have talked about this already today, I greatly apologize. I'm in Tampa, Florida, and my local radio station carries some Pacifica radio programs, one with Democracy Now! By Amy Goodman. She's reporting that $8 million of the $87 billion that's going to Iraq actually went down and was dedicated to go down to Miami for the police force there. And apparently the police acted a whole lot like Army and not police, and again had what they called in Iraq the embedded reporters, and they were acting pretty much like the police themselves, the reporters. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, it's in today's progress report from the Center for American Progress. In fact, it's in my stack of stuff that I was hoping to get to today.
I think that's incredible.
Yeah, I think it is too. $8 million of the $87 billion, and we all thought that this was money for Iraq, but there's huge slush funds. As I recall, there's a $12 billion slush fund.
This
built
is scary.
This yeah,
is scary.
This is the militarization of America,
yes.
And when you put this in combination with General Tommy Franks in his interview with Cigar Aficionado, the official publication for drug addicts.
Magazine. Yes, sir. It's in there. I saw it.
Yeah, yeah, and Tommy Frank says, "Hey, if we have a WMD attack here in the United States, the Constitution's out the window. It's the end of American democracy." And I'm going, "What? No, what? Is he trying to? Is this a trial balloon? Are they trying to soften us up? Is he concerned?" And I thought maybe it's that he's worried about it. But then he goes on to say that George Bush will be recorded by history as one of our greatest presidents. And I'm thinking, "Whoa." But $8 million of the money appropriated for Iraq went to the Miami Police Department to help them. And it would be interesting to know how it was spent. Was it spent to buy them those black jackboot uniforms so that they all look like guys from the Empire and Star Wars, or what? Were you down there, Cindy? Did you see it?
Sure, but I had a friend who went, and she and the group that she was with, they actually left because they were truly frightened that they would be, if not killed, harmed because of the force that they came out in. It looked like, you said, the Star Wars stormtroopers or whatever they were called. Yeah. And she was frightened, as was the whole group of people. They had some older women with them, and they got out.
Yeah,
but,
the other thing.
I'm afraid, Tom.
Yeah. Cindy, what's so unfortunate is that so many Americans are becoming afraid, and I think that we need to translate that fear into anger and action. One of the things, by the way, that I heard also about the Florida thing is that the police didn't really move in and start beating people up and arresting people. And they arrested actually one of the producers or one of the camera people for Democracy Now. And you can see all the information about this on their website at democracynow.org. That they didn't do this until after the representatives of organized labor had left. Apparently, they know that there is still a force that can represent the people in America. They didn't want to pick on them too much. But Cindy, I think it's time for us to get active. Are you getting politically active?
Yes,
is this motivating?
I have.
You?
Yes, and I've even gone so far as to say, oh my God, somebody like me should run for office. I mean it. I'm a nobody, but I'm a good person, and I don't want to see what's happening to America continue to happen. But I am truly afraid that we will never vote for another president in this country. I really am afraid of Dick Cheney and his group. I'm not so much afraid of Bush. I really think he's just the mouthpiece for a lot of real bad, evil men, that this is all planned, and they're ready to take over this country.
Yeah.
I sound crazy.
No, I know, and I can't refute that, Cindy. I can't say you're wrong. I mean, I'm not certain that you're right, but I can't say that you're wrong because it so much looks like that. And that's why it's so important that we do get politically active right now and that we do be spreading the word. I mean, the way that the past movements, whether it was the women's suffrage movement or whether the abolition movement or the movement to start the Revolutionary War, which was not supported by a majority of Americans early on, got going, was two methods, basically. Pamphleteering, which back in those days meant printing out pamphlets and sticking them under people's doors in the dead of night, and now means putting, you know, we've got websites and sending people emails. And the other was what they call committees of correspondence. People organized committees of correspondence to write letters to the editor of the newspapers. And the modern letter to the editor of the newspaper, of course, you've got that. And, by the way, one of the interesting secrets about elected officials is that elected officials, very often, at least the ones that I've known over the years, and I've known several, they read the letters to the editor page in the newspaper before they read any other part of the newspaper, because that's where their constituents are talking to them. And so you start writing letters to the editor of the newspaper, number one. And number two, directly contact your elected representatives and encourage them and say, no, we're not up for this and we don't want this to happen. A $10 donation to a candidate that you believe in, regardless of the party, you know, it's, if you see somebody out there who's $10, $50, $100, whatever you can afford, but I mean, pretty much anybody, and $10, you know, the cost of a pizza, it adds up. You know, Howard Dean says he's going to, instead of like Bush, you know, who's raising $200 million by, you know, going to these dinners where he gets $1 million a whack, he's going to go to 200 dinners. Howard Dean says he's going to find 1 million people who are willing to give him $200 each, or $100, 2 million people who will give him $100 each. And Dennis Kucinich is doing the same thing. And you know, certainly the Greens have been great leaders in this and setting the tone for it. So there's a lot of ways for us to get politically active, Cindy.
The Green Party has been targeted by this called an NGO group, non-governmental organizations to be watched, as has NOW, care organization, the Green Party, and for a lot of different reasons, but basically for having anything to do with dissenting with what the political line is right now. You know, if you don't,
you're talking about the new FBI investigations.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and probably me too. I mean, you know, who knows?
I know. Yeah, I think so.
It probably wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, and I'm thankful you guys are still on the air.
Yeah, I am too.
All right, thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you, Cindy. Thanks for the call. And I'm pleased and honored to be here and on the air. And tag your it, I would say to you who are listening, that each one of us has to stand up and speak out. You know, as Ben Franklin said right after he signed the Declaration of Independence, if we don't hang together, we will surely hang separately. Two bills would benefit top Bush fundraisers. It just keeps on rolling. And see, these are the things that we need to be telling people about how corrupt. As you know, the point I was making before about the Republican Party in the 1870s, the conventional wisdom used to be that the Ulysses S. Grant administration was probably the most corrupt administration in the history of the United States, because he was so corrupt his own Republican Party wouldn't nominate him for a third term, even though he wanted them to. But this administration, the Bush-Cheney administration, has got to be the most corrupt administration in history. Hear this Washington Post article on Saturday. More than three dozen of President Bush's major fundraisers are affiliated with companies that stand to benefit from the passage of the energy and Medicare bills. The energy bill, it's got 22 of his pioneers or rangers, as well as 15 lobbyists. And 24 rangers would benefit from the Medicare bill. Well, what are pioneers and rangers? Pioneers are people who will raise $100,000 for George W., and rangers are those who raise at least $200,000 for George W. The energy bill, this article goes on to say this by Thomas B. Edsel, says the energy bill provides industry tax breaks worth $23.5 billion, along with, and I'm editing as I'm going here, along with $5.4 billion in subsidies and loan guarantees. The single biggest winner in the energy bill, according to this article in the Washington Post, is the Southern Company, one of the nation's largest electricity producers. And at least five Bush pioneers. Keep in mind, Bush pioneers are those who raise $100,000 or more for George W. serve as executives or lobbyists for the Southern Company. On Medicare issues, you got Frank McKinnell, chairman and CEO of Pfizer, has pledged to raise $200,000 for Bush's reelection. It's time to change the group in charge. This is Tom Harbin. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, may I help you?
Tell me what the future holds.
Good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com for The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Show.
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody. What do we do with those folks? We arrest them, they are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
So they're coming to take me away, ha-ha.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Dude,
and
there's Nancy in the background.
Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Ooh, yeah. All right, we're jamming. I wanna jam it with you. We're jamming, jamming.
Transforming the world. By revitalizing democracy, this is Tom Hartman and the IE America Radio Network. You know what the good news is? I remember when George Bush was first elected, having this discussion with a couple of people. And my take on it was that people didn't realize that this creeping fascism had been going on Eisenhower warned about it in his farewell speech, which we played on this program several times. And it was just, you know, slowly taking, you know, the merging of corporate and state interests, the dictionary definition of fascism, was slowly taking on more and more power and speed. It really started to pick up under the Reagan-Bush administration. And my comment was, and Bill Clinton played a very significant part in it, particularly with the signing the Telecommunications Act, and signing NAFTA and GATT. In fact, not just signing it, aggressively working to push through NAFTA and GATT. They would not have happened were it not for Bill Clinton, because the majority of Congress was opposed to it, as was the majority of the American people, was opposed to our participating in those trade agreements. And he jammed those things through in the dead of night in a lame duck session as everybody was getting ready to go home for the Christmas holidays. And yet everybody thought Bill Clinton was wonderful. And my comment was, you know, George Bush, if he comes in and he does what I think he's going to do, he's going to take the mask off. America's going to see. People are going to see what these people are really all about. And that hopefully will lead to somebody like another FDR coming along and saying, we are going to take American democracy back. And it's just getting so obvious. Here we've got this National Review. I mean, this is National Review, the right-wing poll. Last Thursday, the House International Relations Committee narrowly passed a resolution introduced by Representative Bass Ballinger of North Carolina requiring that any amnesty deal for 5 million Mexican illegal aliens be linked to opening Mexico's state-controlled oil industry to investment by U.S. companies. You get it? I mean, it's like people are waking up. Our program today produced by Louise Hartman and Joe McPherson. The board has been run by Jay Bilecki, Steve Damschroeder, and John Lucas. Thanks a lot for joining us today. Join us again tomorrow, same time, same place.